Welcome to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. Gary Scheiman added his musical touch to the first two Bioshock games developed by 2K, now known as Irrational Games. In Bioshock, your player, Jack, is thrust into an underwater dystopia named Rapture in the year 1960. Inside Rapture, Jack encounters intelligent human beings who've gone crazy from taking a drug called Atom. Rapture is colorful and beautiful, but also very dangerous and scary. To musically paint this complex world, Gary used 20th century techniques like aleatoric music and concrete music. Aside from winning numerous awards for both his Bioshock scores, Gary's music from these games, as well as his music for the game Dante's Inferno, was recently performed live by a full orchestra at California State University, Northridge. Composer Gary Scheiman, welcome to Top Score. The Bioshock games are a little scary for me.
I hope I contributed to your fear factor, if that's what I was supposed to do.
Yes, I would say you contributed quite adequately to my fear factor.
Okay.
So, and speaking of, the world in which those first two games in the Bioshock series takes place is terrifying. It's a terrifying place called Rapture. And so I would like for you to describe what Rapture's original intent was and what it became, and then how did that influence your music?
Well, I don't know if I'm the expert on Rapture, because that would be Ken Levine and Irrational Games, the folks who made the game. But I know, I mean, basically they hired me to make Rapture scarier and more intriguing, and just to fill out this whole world to give it another dimension. It was described to me as a really insane, crazy place. But it was also described as a really interesting place because if you know anything about this backstory of Bioshock, an industrialist believes that the world is really not a great place and designs a city. Imagine New York City at the bottom of the North Atlantic, and really creates it as a utopia for artists and creative people and workers, and, you know, technologically impossible, especially in the 40s when it was supposedly constructed. But nevertheless, it has this sort of really interesting intellectual backstory, which I found really intriguing as I thought about how the music should sound. And of course, what happens is the unexpected, where they find this drug in a sea slug of all places, that actually makes people, at least initially, stronger, more intelligent. I mean, it's a human enhancer in every respect, but eventually they go crazy from taking the drug. They become deformed, and the drug trade becomes everything to the people of Rapture, and this world sort of decays into a civil war, essentially, and it becomes a nightmare. People are killing one another. Every attempt to sort of stop it fails. People are all hyped up and become monstrous from this drug called Atom. So essentially, when you, the player, arrive in this city, it's pretty horrific. So the backdrop is this sort of really beautiful Art Deco city that's just bloodstained, you know, and horrific. And there's all these people called, they call them splicers. Essentially, this Atom splices their basic DNA and makes them strong and intense, but eventually monstrous, and they lose their minds. And so you're entering as a dystopian city, actually, that you could possibly imagine, and you're entering just sort of this nightmare world, and you have to try to escape. And you're sort of led through this journey by this one individual who turns out not to be who he initially says he is, and at the same time, there's a backstory that you only find out by playing through the game. Mm-hmm. So from a composer's standpoint, I was just intrigued by all that. That just sounded fantastic to me. as I started to think about the music and what the music should sound like, I started to experiment with different styles and combining different styles of music, including music from the early 20th century, because it seemed like there was this whole intellectual component, even though Bioshock can be played on a number of levels. It could be for an individual who just wants to go in and have a good time and shoot things and use these powers that you get because you take Adam yourself and just have fun. Or you could really sort of enjoy it on a number of deeper levels. So I went for the deep level, at least in the associations that I could make with the music. Ken Levine said something really interesting to me early on. He goes, look, and no one knew whether that game was going to be successful or not. Certainly didn't expect the success that came, which was amazing.
Yeah.
But he just said, look, we're going to go for it. We're not going to hold back creatively. We're just going to make this amazing game. And I don't want to dumb it down. I want everyone to put their greatest creative and artistic efforts forth. So that gave me license to really try some unique things, at least for the time, at that time, 3 or 4 years ago now. It included using music from the early 20th century styles and using aleatoric elements. And for those who aren't familiar with that, that's basically allowing the orchestral musicians to improvise and create within a very sort of designed improvisation where they're given direction. And it creates some very eerie and very scary sounds from the orchestra, not your typical scales and such, you know. So there was that element. And then there was also some of this style of music from the 40s called musique concrète, which was the style of taking real-world sounds and, you know, like whether it's whatever you recorded from a car to any kind of a sound from the real world and creating these sound montages. So that also became an element within it. But by sort of putting all three of these styles together, it created something fairly interesting, I think, and certainly different from the typical video game score.
Things that I really was drawn into by your music is, I think, in many ways the same thing that drew me into Rapture, which is when you're in Rapture, it is terrifying, but it's beautiful. You're underwater, and the world itself was designed to be a beautiful city with beautiful lights and beautiful theaters and all of these things, but it's still terrifying. And I felt like that was how you wrote that music. It was scary music, but it was beautifully scary. It wasn't ugly scary.
Well, thank you. And I think, yes, that was my intention, to have this sort of beauty to it. And also, I think the licensed music, meaning the songs that were licensed from the era, also played into that aesthetic as well, where you would have How Much Is That Doggy in the Window, that old song, playing while you're killing.
Yes, or the Nutcracker or something
right.
Like that, yeah.
Exactly, with the Nutcracker when you're trying to kill Splicers or...
That's when they're trying to kill...
Sandra Cohen.
Yep.
Yes, which was one of my favorites in the game. So, yeah, it just created lots of contrasts, and it really was fun to do. It was sort of intellectually fun as a composer who has a classical bent and studied concert music and have written some and loves, you know, that kind of music, to really kind of just go, I'm just going to be creative here and really have a blast. And it was really fun. It was really fun to take these sort of really dissonant sort of atmospheric sounds, aleatoric or whatever was generating them. Sometimes it was some synthesized sounds, and then to use to write some solo violin lines over them, or cello cello lines. And I, of course, I had a great violinist, Martin Chalaforo, who is the principal concertmaster of the LA Phil,
right?
Playing all that, and so it was. And then he came in and recorded for a day, and he brought a Stradivarius, and I was like, I was going, what is that violin? That is awesome sounding. He goes, it's a Strat. I go, oh, crap, that's great. That's cool.
Worth more than I'll ever see in my entire life. Right. Well, and yeah, that actually segues nicely because you have had the opportunity to work with some really amazing musicians on the BioShock games and on Dante's Inferno. And you got to record in some pretty magnificent studios as well. So I'm sure that without saying that was a magnificent experience, but why do you think that game developers are choosing to invest so much in the music?
Well, I think they realize that it adds a really strong component. I think that's why. I think it adds something valuable. Just as films spend quite a bit of money on the score, it's a really important feature. You know, look, if you're spending $25 or $30 million developing a game, a few hundred thousand dollars on the score is not that big of the percentage of that budget, and it can add a lot of atmosphere and creating sort of an iconic design element that can really enhance the experience. So I think it works, and the players love it and appreciate it. It just helps you immerse yourself in this experience, and it helps you connect emotionally to what's going on in some really interesting ways. You know, there is something really mystical, magical. I mean, I've thought about this for many years, why music has this sort of amazing effect when we see some visual in a movie or in a video game and we hear music and it sort of connects everything and on some level where it's like it creates some third thing that's really truly inexplicable. I've never heard anyone explain it really well, why we evolved in this way, but we did, and we have it, and it's and I'm happy that that's true.
Me too. In the first BioShock game, we're introduced to this unique relationship between the Big Daddies and the Little Sisters. And just being aware of, as I was thinking about how to word this question, people who don't know what that means might think it's really odd. But in fact, the Big Daddies are these humans, right, that have been genetically kind of fused with these big submersible suits, and they have to protect the Little Sisters. And so it's just this very interesting relationship that the two, they're always together, or usually always, of course, together, and the Big Daddy protecting the Little Sister from any harm because she's completely defenseless. And I felt like the poignancy of that relationship, the intimacy of that relationship, is also somewhat reflected in your music. There are just some very, very intimate moments that you captured very well in the score that coincide with these moments between the Big Daddy and the Little Sister.
Well, yeah, and you, one important critical element, the Little Sisters are gathering Adam from the dead.
Right.
Which is, so that they're actually being used for commercial, they're being sort of used and abused for commercial purposes. They're very vulnerable. But I forget, there's some details about why little girls are valuable. And so they're sort of zombied out and doing whatever they're supposed to do. And then they're being protected by these big monstrous big daddies who can really, you know, kill anything that comes near them to protect them. So it's sort of like this monstrous commercial enterprise. But they, of course, become very close and dependent upon one another. And so, yeah, it's an opportunity to create music that is sympathetic and that can have an element of sympathy and maybe sadness and poignancy, because there's no happy music. The only happy-ish music is at the very end of the game. If you've played as a good player, you haven't been killing the little sisters when you grab them and kill the Big Daddy, because you have a choice. You have some moral choices in BioShock. You have to kill the Big Daddies, and you have to harvest the Adam from the little sisters. It's just part of the game's strategy. Mm-hmm. So you can choose to save the little girls, or you can choose to get more Adam and basically destroy them, you know. And so if you've chosen throughout the game to save the little sisters, then you get rewarded at the end with a happy ending, a movie, essentially.
Yep.
There is a bit of music in that that has a sort of like a poignant, happy score that I got to write. But the rest of the music is really more on the sad side when it wasn't being kind of scary and ominous, there's a cue called Welcome to Rapture, which is neither scary or it's certainly mm-hmm. it's sort of a little eerie. Ultimately, the theme for Bioshock is sad, and the reason I thought that would make sense to write this sort of sad, poignant music is because it's such a tragedy. I mean, I just thought, you know, in a way, it's a tragedy that we've seen many times in human history where some group or some leader has some big idea to create a utopia on Earth, and it usually ends up in some tragic outcome. So I saw that as sort of a tragic flaw in humanity. That was an underlying motif for the Bioshock games.
You're listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. My guest is Bioshock composer Gary Scheiman. For the first Bioshock, you got to write a standalone piece for piano.
Oh, yes. There's a piece of music that ends up getting called Cohen's Masterpiece. And, I got asked by the audio director, whose name is Emily as well, Emily Ridgway. So she says, okay, there's this character, Sander Cohen, and he... you know, is sort of the overlord of this level. It was called the Recreation Deck when I was working on it. And he writes this piece of music and he sort of tortures this pianist who's playing it. But a little admission here, I didn't quite understand who Sander Cohen was when I wrote the piece. I didn't fully understand it. So I probably overwrote that piece of music. I thought he was a little more of an artist ended up being. He's sort of a hack, really, in the end. And so I sort of wrote this piece that really would have required someone a little more intellectual, a little more serious about music for him. But Ken said, you know, it's a little wrong, but I like it so much, we'll just use it. I don't think I've ever told that story before, but it's true. screw it, we're going to use it. And I really liked the piece. It was really fun to write because essentially it's what we call in films source music, meaning that it's not like music that's just coming out of the walls, you know, that there's really no reason for music. It's a piece of music that you see someone playing the piano and you see Sandra Cohen sort of instructing this character. I think his name is Fitzpatrick, and he's in the end, he's unhappy with the performance, so he blows him up.
Yes, in a big fiery flame, he does.
Right. Exactly. So so that's your introduction to that piece of music. It actually ended up getting used as background while you're on that level. You hear it in different places just as background music. It sort of becomes a score at some point.
It's kind of like a Rachmaninoff piece on acid, really, is what it sounds like. But it's magnificent, you know?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I was taking acid that day.
Well, but you know what
just
I mean? It's,
kidding,
it's very, very showy and very virtuosic. I mean, you definitely have to be one heck of a piano player to make it through that. So
yes,
you would be to play something by Rachmaninoff, but there's this added element of something isn't quite right here.
Yes. Yes, no, I agree. And that was part of my intention when I was writing. It was sort of like, okay, this is a very showy piece, but it's a little twisted here. It was a lot of fun to write. I remember calling my agent, and everyone was really happy with it. And calling, and I feel like I'm a real composer today. I actually really wrote some music because I worked really hard on that piece of music, and like took me a couple of days or more, maybe 3 days to really kind of perfect it because I started it and I went, oh, I really like this. This is really cool. I'm going to send this to Emily, and I sent her like part of it, and she goes, oh, this is great. Keep going. And so I did, and then I just finished it, you know, because they were happy with it. I didn't want to keep going if they hated it. It's like, no, it's too much work if it's not going to get used.
Right.
A lot of people actually do learn it and put it up on YouTube.
Dante's Inferno is a very aggressive game with lots of action. The pacing is completely different. I mean, it's a completely different game. It's a different genre, different objectives. BioShock, you can truly move at your own pace if you choose. And Dante's Inferno, you're kind of shuttled along throughout the objectives. It's just a different type of gameplay. What was it like writing for games with such different pacing?
Well, when I was asked to write BioShock, they initially said, we don't really want any combat music. So my initial pass with orchestra and all that we had, there was no combat music. And it was only a couple of months after I'd finished that I got a call and said, we want you to write some combat music. We do, after all, we need some combat music. So they sort of brought me back in and I wrote like 3 or 4 pieces of combat music. On the other hand, Dante's Inferno was full of combat music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would say at least 60% of the music that I wrote for it was combat, because you are always battling and chasing and attacking and slashing and striking.
Yes.
I mean, just there is a huge difference. Writing combat music is just a lot of work. It's just a lot of notes, you know. really,
yeah,
really fun. You know, it's really
seven levels of it.
Yeah, I scored every level of hell. That's right. Maybe I don't have to go there now. I don't know, but or if I do, I could bring my music with. God forbid. But in any event, it was a lot of combat music, and the scale was more epic and big, and you know these vast panoramas that you see. I think they did such a great job on the artwork. It was just
absolutely
visual masterpiece. And so I just got to write these really wild, intense pieces of music. I was listening to a lot of George Crumb. I don't know if you know his music.
Oh, but, yeah.
I was being influenced by George Crumb while I was writing that score. I don't think it sounds like George Crumb, but there was just something wild about some of Crumb's music, you know, unpredictable and really... really, really nice. So,
yeah, absolutely.
That was an influence as well.
Also, for Dante's Inferno, there's a significant choral element involved. Did you enjoy or dislike implementing a choir with a score like that?
Oh, no, it was fun. We had a great choir. We went to London, we recorded at Abbey Road Studios. With the Philharmonia Orchestra and this group called Metro Voices, which is just a great choir. I mean, we had a 40-piece choir, and they came in, and they just nailed the stuff. There's a lot of sort of unusual techniques that I asked them to implement. That was one of the reasons we wanted to go to London, because the choirs there are really amazing.
Yes, they are.
Next to L.A., you know, really every bit the equal is London. London has a fantastic pool of orchestral players and of singers, and several great studios, especially the Abbey Road and Aaron Lyndhurst are just great studios. So, you know, a lot of people do go there to record. I mean, L.A. is great as well. But I had a fantastic experience conducting at Abbey Road, and then we recorded the orchestra for 2 days and then the choir for 2 days. So that was all done separately, and then we had some solo singers that we recorded, and it was a great experience. It really was.
Mentioned before that composers can't fake writing orchestral music. How do you feel that your classical training then enhances your work?
It enhances it a lot. You can certainly take a string patch or a string samples and put your hands down and create chords. But generally, composers who don't have much training, it shows, unless they're smart enough to hire orchestrators and people around them to kind of fill in their gaps. I mean, I have orchestrators, but basically I write every note. They may add a flute to something I didn't think of, and then I go, okay, let's try that. Yeah, the flute would be good with that. Okay. The way you write music, the complexity, the counterpoint, knowing how that should sound and work properly, knowing how to write for instruments, knowing where the instruments' ranges are to create the sound that you want to achieve, how to write aleatoric music, all those sorts of things, which are often outsourced by composers who don't know how to do it. I don't know how you fake it. You know, you really can't. Thank you.
So you mentioned you listened a lot to George Crumb for Dante's Inferno. Did you listen to anyone specific to help you get ready for Bioshock?
You know, I was listening to Berg's Violin Concerto.
Oh, that's good stuff.
This is really a beautiful piece. And those sort of like angular lines for solo violin and cello that are in Bioshock, I think were influenced by Berg. That composition, Welcome to Rapture, I was sort of thinking maybe Shostakovich or Bartok. You hear that music as you're descending for the first time in this bathysphere. You're going to eventually at some point out this little porthole. You see the city, which is a dramatic visual. But initially they said, you know, right, you're going to the scariest place on freaking Earth, you know? And then they heard it and they go, you know, on second thought, I think we gave you the wrong direction. We don't want to sort of pre-warn everyone that this is scary. We want to intrigue them with this place. And I immediately said, you know, you're absolutely right. I didn't resent that at all. I go, we experimented with that. They actually ended up using that piece of music elsewhere. And so I started writing this piece, and I started with this sort of flowing, really fast-moving triplet 16ths in the solo violin, because I thought of that as sort of like flowing water, really. And that piece just sort of unfolded, and they immediately loved it. They were said, this is great. This is perfect. That piece has kind of also become one of the more memorable works from that score, and has gotten performed all over the world, in Europe, Sweden, and Germany, and Denmark, and throughout the United States by the Video Games Live concert. I teach one day a week at USC, and I try to make sure that my students know is the more you know, the deeper your skills are, the more you'll be able to achieve. You just eliminate all these limitations that people who come to music with a very limited, not only limited skills, but a limited listening experience. They haven't listened to a lot of music that could influence you and give you ideas about how to write something really unusual. You're sort of limited by what's in the air right at that moment, and I think that's limiting.
Gary, thank you so much for your time today. It was a pleasure talking with you.
You're very welcome. It was a pleasure speaking with you, and I love the fact that you do both classical music and that you appreciate video game music, of course.
You've been listening to Top Score from Classical Minnesota Public Radio. I'm Emily Reese. Our technical director is Sam Keenan. We had additional technical support from Rob Byers. On the next episode of Top Score, we talk to Sean Murray, composer of the wildly successful Call of Duty Black Ops and Call of Duty World at War.
Who's the audience for this?
Minnesota Broadcast. You'll have to ask them because they know more than me. Let me get you.
They're not here. They're in Minnesota. Okay. Whoops, I just got unplugged there. Hello.
Hi, Gary. I'm Emily.
How much is that doggy in the window? The one with the hope that dough